Joseph.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul.
And I'm Simon Carnell.
Here we are, in the Magic Castle.
Indeed. There's no photos, no video, but there's no rule about audio recordings.
There is nothing in the bylaws.
Particularly when we're technically backstage. I mean, we're not backstage, but we're in your theater and no one else is here.
Yeah, John Armstrong and Maya's Theater, Thursday through Sunday, and it's Friday. I tell you what you don't do at the Magic Castle, John, when you're hired in to perform.
What don't you do, Nick?
A show of about 80% all new material.
Nick, did you do this yesterday?
John Armstrong and I did. And you know what? I blame John. I don't blame myself because I didn't have the confidence to do this.
You know what? I'm going to start a little book of notes for John. Mm-hmm. And this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
John, don't do that.
Don't do that. It wasn't until, like, we did two shows yesterday of mostly new material, and we didn't bomb. It wasn't bad. I think everybody walked out and saw a good show, not a great show. But, you know, it's weird. You do stuff that you've done 1,000 times and you can feel it, and you know the material, you know the reactions, and then you're doing essentially new stuff and you're just out there naked.
Well,
even if you've rehearsed it 1,000 times, you're out there
it's
naked.
It's not the same as doing it for real live human beings.
Totally. You're just out of your element completely. And then John was having lunch or something with some people today, and they were giving him notes, and it really got him in his head. And I was kind of anxious about all the changes I was trying to make for this show. Like, there's two other performers performing this week that are doing routines similar, not the same, but similar to stuff John and I were doing, which we were unaware of. So we had to swap out, like, two things. And we're going to have to put in stuff that I don't normally do here, not my A material. And we were getting stressed out, and he's like, you know what, I have people coming that want to see a good show, and so we just kind of reverted back. So now I'm doing, like, two new things as opposed to...
Well, that's a pretty healthy number, to be honest.
Yeah.
How many things in the show total?
We're each doing about 20 minutes, you know, so 40-minute show we're doing.
Right, but I mean, how many bits is that?
Things? Five, six?
Yeah, so 30, 40%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad. That's a reasonable new material ratio when you want to grind in some stuff.
Yeah, because, you know, you think, you have this, like, ego about you that you think people have seen your stuff. They're like, oh, they're going to be so sick of it. And then you realize nobody knows who the hell you are. They just want to come see a good show.
And even the ones who have, you should ignore those people.
Exactly.
And that's one of the traps of this place. This wonderful, glorious Magic Castle is you can and you see it all the time, performers falling to the trap of thinking about the regulars and thinking about the many people here who have seen them before and start playing to that crowd, playing to the back of the room, and it makes them worse.
Yeah, and that's why we wrote this show. We're like, we want to do all new material. We want to try new stuff. So, you know, the people that have seen us before can see new stuff. And you realize that it's exactly what you said. You're playing to the back of the room. You're playing to five or two people in the audience, and this theater seats 40. So 38 people are seeing a half-assed show.
Yeah.
But that's not to say you shouldn't always be working on new material.
Yeah,
I think
completely.
It's important to sandwich in new stuff
But
as
again,
much as you can.
One or two routines new, that's a good amount to be testing out and making sure making sure you've got the solid stuff.
Yeah, for me, I always I fall into the trap of comparing what we do to comedians because in many ways it's similar.
Yeah.
But they can go out and do 5 or 10 minutes of stuff they're just riffing and exploring and figuring it out. And if they're a good enough comedian, they can pull it off.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to walk out of there and say that was half-assed. But here, even if it's something you've rehearsed, but you're walking through it, I think people will note. I think it's more noticeable with magic.
Well, I mean, the difference is comedy is defined as anything that's funny, right?
Sure,
if it makes you laugh, it has achieved its core objective as comedy. Now, it can also be thought-provoking or powerful or subversive. You know, but those are secondary or bonus objectives. It
totally.
Still has to – if it's not funny, it's not comedy and people go, eh. And in magic, it's got to be, you know, mind-blowingly amazing. It has to give you an experience of something that seems impossible happening in front of you. And that is harder to riff your way through. And an experienced comedian can make almost anything funny.
Yeah.
You know, they can make bombing funny. There's all kinds of ways to subvert that. But if the trick isn't magical, you haven't got that much else to fall back on, even if you are really funny and engaging and charming and delightful mm-hmm. or whatever.
That was our 8 o'clock show yesterday. I was trying this new rope escape where I get out of my suit coat, but I'm still tied mm-hmm. in the ropes. And I'm doing the music cues, and I bent a weird way, and I forgot my remote was in my pocket. Yeah. So this timed song stopped and then restarted. And I'm just making jokes about it. And, like, the booking director, Jack, is in there. I'm like, this is a great show for Jack. I just called it out. And it was funny, but it was like...
Yeah, it still hurts.
People come here to see magic, not to see funniness. Hopefully the good magic is funny, but I do take it personally when I hear stories, you know, not necessarily directed at what I'm doing, but other people who come here and go, yeah, it was fun, it was funny, but we came to the Magic Castle to be amazed. People don't come here to laugh, even though they should be laughing at funny material and whatnot. But the goal for people to come here is for their minds to be bended in a fun way.
And it's also, like you said, the people who left didn't see a bad show. Sure. But that's good enough isn't good enough anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's an element of... It's not really ego, it's just self-respect. It's just going, no, we can do better than that, and we should be doing better than that. Unless it's they're going, that was really something fantastic. It's not like it wasted their time or their money, but if you know that you can do better, mm-hmm. it behooves us to strive.
The thing is, like, in your case, you've achieved these goals in your career. Mm. You've fooled Penn and Teller. You've won these awards.
My biggest goal.
Delayed fool. But, like, you have these notches on your belt.
Yeah, that's true.
And... we've been doing this long enough where it's like, oh, that feels really good. But now there's a new level of expectation. Yeah.
Which is it's a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot, that whole thing that, what's like, I know, like, my friend Shoot, who's amazing, Shutagawa, mm-hmm. Japanese magician, legendarily brilliant. Something like FISM, Magic World Championships, he's got almost more to lose by not winning than to gain by winning.
Oh, sure.
Because he has this incredible, well-deserved reputation. And I think about that and it's a very common thing in many fields, people feeling trapped by their success into not being able to be as experimental and risky. And that's, I know, there's a few performers. I first heard about Daniel Kitson. Have you ever seen him? Do you know who that is?
I've never seen him.
Super famous in Australia and UK comedy circles. Probably not as big over here. Really fascinating, brilliant performer, writer. Really, someone I'm always interested to watch his shows. And one of the things he would often do is do his main show at big comedy festivals or whatever, and then do an unadvertised underground 1 a.m. Pay a dollar at the door where he would actually try the experimental stuff. And so finding a place to do both, doing the polished stuff for the general people who may not have even heard of him, let alone seen him before. But the thing about him, he's still boldly experimental many times I've seen him, and often controversial. Not everyone's a fan at all. But I've really enjoyed the few things I've seen him do.
Well, you see that with people who, like, win Oscars. You know, they win the highest award you can in acting and then disappear. Not everyone, but a lot of them. Like, Cuba Gooding Jr. wins an Oscar, and then a couple years later he's doing Snow Dogs. Which is, like, no judgment, and he's had people like that have an interesting career. But it's funny how you hit this peak, and you're like, oh, crap, what do I do now? And then you start digging for, I got to do this, I got to be experimental, I got to, you know, build this show or create that. And it doesn't, I don't know, it's, I'm in that new territory too, because I worked last year on Justin Willman's show that just came out on Netflix. Mm. Please watch it. It's
Magic for Humans, right?
Magic for Humans. It's very funny. I'm very proud of it.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm excited.
I'm in it for 30 seconds, episode 5, but I look like a creep. In a good way.
Cinema verite.
Yeah. But I'm, like, hesitant to even – I want to share it out so people watch it, but I don't – it's a weird thing I'm going through because I've never experienced – I've never done TV before. Mm. So this is a new thing I'm experiencing of – like, I have it in my Instagram profile, Magic Castle, this, Magic for Humans. But it's, like, I'm hesitant to do that because then – or even having it as a credit before the show starts because now there's an expectation. Yeah. I love the idea of low expectations in the audience.
Yeah. It's tough, isn't it? There's so many – because my immediate mental rebuttal to that is, set the expectations high because then you force yourself to work hard enough to meet them. And damn right, put that pressure on yourself to keep striving. But at the same time, there is value to free experimentation without pressure where you can afford to be riskier. And yeah, I don't know if I don't have an obvious conclusion to that, except to being aware of both forces.
You see a lot of that in the Gary Shandling documentary towards the end of
Gary
his life.
I don't know who that is.
Very funny comedian known for the Larry Sanders Show on HBO and was a guest host of The Tonight Show. Just a brilliant classic, you know, 70s to early 2000s comedian, stand-up. But in this documentary that Judd Apatow did on HBO, it's a two-parter. It's really good. You see him going back towards the end of his life around, this is about probably 2008, 2007, where he's going up at Comedy Magic and just kind of doing okay, but bombing, you know, because he's just out of his, he's, you know, hasn't gone to the gym, you know, hasn't worked the muscles. But that's, I don't know, that's a whole...
For non-comedy listeners, that has gone to the gym figuratively. Nick was there, doing his work, working on his stuff.
Not many comedians are going to the gym that often, or magicians.
Well, I mean, shit, that's important though, right? Keeping yourself in good physical and mental fitness like makes your shows better. Well, yeah, genuinely something to think about.
You got to get up,
staying exercise, staying healthy, staying rested, staying nourished.
Well,
these things matter.
I've had luckily a really busy couple of weeks. You know, is that. San Francisco last week and with Armstrong doing Outside Lands and then hanging out at Magic Live and then had some other shows before that. And on Monday, my wife and I fly home and then we're going to New York for like a little vacation for like a week and a half. And I was talking about this with Michael Rayner. He hasn't gone since he's been doing this. Like he's, I think, early 50s, late 40s. He's been doing this since his teens.
Yeah.
He hasn't gone more than a week without doing at least a handful of shows in some capacity. And I've realized that since I moved to L.A. or even since Disney where I was doing 12 shows a week, I haven't had a week off in a while. I think maybe Macau or so was the last time I've gone over a week when we had that week break in the middle.
That glorious break.
It was wonderful. And I'm kind of terrified, and I'm looking forward to it as a vacation, but I'm terrified because I have to come back and do a weekend of shows and – I'm like, oh man, those first two are going to be super rough.
Yeah, but if you particularly in those first two, if you have your familiar polished material that you know, it'll actually. Yeah. Having done that a few times every now and then, taken a break of however long and then come back to it and feel good. It's like putting on a comfortable familiar sweater if it is your polished familiar material that you know how to play well.
Yeah, I think it comes back to the muscle memory comes back and that's because if you've done it. I haven't done the egg trick in forever, and I did it last night. I threw it in last night, and I was really worried that I wasn't going to be able to find the physicality or the movement, and it was fine.
Yeah.
You figure it out.
Well, it's funny. It's so hilarious that we're recording this now because this is the second of four nights for you here, right, at the castle, at the legendary, world-famous, super interesting Magic Castle.
Where everybody, you get unsolicited emails now from people that want to come in.
All the time.
It's that world-famous that strangers are begging you to come in.
Yeah,
and the best part is it's often on dates you're not working, but I'm sorry to cut you off.
And the fact that then I'm working here next week, which is rare. Again, no one works here regularly. That's one of the things that the most common misconceptions about the castle, even in LA. No one works here regularly. You get booked occasionally for a week-long, usually run, or slightly shorter.
Yeah.
But if they love you, you'll do maybe three times a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of really the realistic maximum.
And I'm at three right now, so I will not work the rest of the year.
Yeah, probably not.
Well, that's fine.
And it's fine. That's how it works, because on any given night, 30% of the people in the building are regulars, so they want to have a high variety turnover of different acts from all over the world. And so it's rare. Have I done it this year? Oh, yeah, with Shoot in the Pella.
Yeah.
But I haven't actually worked a week here in – I couldn't even remember how long.
Yeah, it's been
– so I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. But right now – so it's funny. We're like Magic Bros at the castle. You're this week. I'm next week. It's rare that lines up.
Well, this whole week, it's like all of our friends are working this week. You know, we have Carl Hine. We have Zabrecki. Chris Capehart, a few other people, and it's a
pretty solid week.
It's a great week, not including our shows yesterday. but it's wild. I didn't even look at who was working because it's oddly becoming commonplace to work here, not in a pompous way, but in a this is kind of a home. This is a home theater now, which is great.
It's nice when it becomes familiar and comfortable.
Yeah, and then when you look
at exciting enough to keep you motivated.
You look at the schedule and you see people that you love and respect. Yeah. You're like, oh. Cool.
It's great. Well, it's one of the things that, and I'm facing this right now. I'm still trying to decide my material for next week.
Yeah.
And I'm facing exactly that dichotomy between do I do safe, reliable, or do I experiment with, so I'm, you know, we constantly have ideas. I've got a bunch of ideas I'm really itching to work on, and I am trying to decide which ones. I'm probably going to be doing 5 routines, 2 of which are newish, one of which is brand new but based on an existing one. It's sort of an upgrade of an old thing I've been doing for a long time. And the other one is a, again, it's not like it's nothing. There's a difference between completely new versus kind of a rework of an old idea with different dressing and a different presentation. Mm-hmm. And there's also,
that's not as scary to do because I'm doing a lot of that today.
Yeah. And there's one trick that I've been working on forever, for at least 7 years. And it's always been okay. It's never been great. And I keep, it's one of those ones that I want it to be great so much because it's such a good bit. And it, I think maybe now I finally cracked it. I'm hoping.
Yeah, that's a great feeling.
We'll find out. Because but I thought that the last 6 times I busted out to work on it, I was wrong.
John and I had this killer ending yesterday where 3 borrowed objects have vanished throughout the show and appear in a sealed peanuts container at the end of the show from a bag that's been in full view the whole time.
Damn.
And we did something wrong.
Yeah.
Something, because the first show, crappy reaction. It could have just been the audience and just not getting it. Second show was okay reaction, impressed, but not like what we were expecting.
Yeah.
Literally, object, the definition of this trick is, you know, classically called object to impossible location. And this is a impossible location.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny. You have these ideas where you think things are just going to kill, and then they don't. And then things that you're like, oh, this might work. Like something new, you saw me try 2 weeks ago, Booby Trap. First time I did it, I'm like, I'll see if this happens. Killer reaction. Yeah. You're like, okay, I guess that has to stay in the show now.
Know.
There's no way to predict it.
A Booby Trap crowd. Scott Neri's Booby Trap, weekly amazing great variety show in Hollywood. A Booby Trap crowd is a lot more exuberant usually than a Magic Castle crowd. Not that Magic Castle crowd isn't great, but...
But I don't know, I've done... Sometimes those crowds can be more critical in weird ways because they're hipper crowds. They've seen a lot of
stuff.
They're
more ironic LA scene.
Yeah, and I don't I don't know. There's
whereas people here are living out their bullshit Harry Potter fantasy or whatever.
Whatever you want to call it.
What was I thinking about? I can't remember. It was something. Oh, so theories... Having not seen that show that you were just talking about with the things to the impossible location, one, having played a lot with the object to impossible location plot because it's a classic, and I don't do any things to impossible location because one of the things I figured out that's often a problem with it is, and this is a theory from Chuck Fain, one of my sort of main magic mentors way back, who was, you know, at the Magic Castle in the early days with Vernon and all those years and back in the real heydays, was it's often not enough to get a really strong reaction. It's not enough for something to be amazing or impossible. It usually also has to be surprising.
Yeah.
If you think about the best magic effects, usually there is at least an element of surprise.
Yeah.
People don't see it coming. And if I'm thinking out loud here in brainstorm mode, if 3 things have vanished throughout the show, that's already giving the question, where are they going to appear? They're going to appear somewhere. Mm-hmm. If there's a thing obviously in full view, it's entirely possible people have already joined the dots. And a kind of, even though they don't know how it's happened and are amazed, if they've seen it coming too far in advance, it will be, I knew they were going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how much we think of our job as doing things that are impossible. Honestly, most of the reaction often comes from the surprise, not the astonishment.
Oh, totally. And I think that goes for anything creative, and especially like movies these days, where like I saw The Incredibles 2, and I thought it was great. But I wasn't surprised in any capacity with that story because I think the whole audience was like, this is a lot of fun. This is beautiful to watch.
Very predictable, nothing that really makes you go, whoa, what? Oh, wow.
And that's what you're fighting as a comedian. That's what you're fighting in magic. And even as a musician, too, you're trying to surprise. How do you twist these same four
notes?
Remember,
comedy is intrinsically surprise.
Yeah.
There is. I cannot think of – I'm finding it very hard to think of a – really good comedic moment that doesn't involve surprise ever. Like a joke, that's the point. The punchline, you don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
If you see it coming, it's a lot less funny.
Yeah.
Still funny, but hugely diminished.
And that's
I think magic's similar. Mm-hmm. It has but we don't really think about that as much.
Yeah, we're so, at least in my case, I'm so wrapped up in it's got to be clever, it's got to be this, it's got to be unique. But you don't realize that you have to put yourself in this. Like, we've gone back to this before, like, you're I think one of the best things you've given me is asking real people, what did you think of that? Yeah. And this goes back to the notes episode with John, but it's sometimes more powerful to get notes from people that aren't
completely.
In performance in any capacity.
Way more. Well, because they're your target audience. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who matter, and so their opinion is so much more relevant.
Yeah.
And often more surprising, because they're so different to us. You know, we are performers. We live and breathe this stuff. Other performers are too. We're too close to it. It's the three blind men and the elephant.
Yeah.
Too close to it to see it objectively.
Totally.
Do we pause now? I think.
Pausing
while this is happening.
Hello.
Something. Hello. Hey.
Armando. It's Armando. We're recording a podcast.
Are you a special guest now? Do we leave this in?
Armando's in. Armando, you don't get any royalties from this, but I'll give you a drink.
Nice.
Armando is one of the famous butlers here.
It blows my mind that there is an actual job title butler.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels, I don't know, Armando's cool. He's a great guy.
Cool, great guy.
It feels like such a subservient job title. I just always feel awkward and weird having a quote-unquote butler.
Butler slash friend.
Yeah, well, sort of, I don't know, food, drink, attendant, I don't know.
Jack of all trades. He just had a baby.
Really?
Round of applause for Armando.
Oh, shit. Good work.
Yeah, there's nobody in here, but it's just one applause.
You make organic baby.
Organic babies.
You make people now.
Goddamn right.
You can buy those at Whole Foods. But yeah, it's one of the weird perks of working here is you get a butler, you get a man who comes in before the show. You need anything?
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Ricky Gervais talked about how quickly you get used to like VIP treatment. Like, the first time he got first class, he's like, "Oh, this is really nice. This is great." And the second time, he was supposed to get first class, but didn't. Something happened with the ticket where it was just like business select or something.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
And I've been noticing that
completely.
Too. Like John and I were working Outside Lands last week. You've done that festival, a big music festival like Lollapalooza. And they give you these VIP badges and you get to go backstage. And one day, for whatever reason, the path we would always go to backstage, there was a girl standing there who was working with security. It wasn't even security. It was just event staff. She's like, "I'm sorry, sir, you can't go." She was so polite. "I'm sorry, sir, you can't go through here." And I was like, "What the heck? I come through here yesterday four times." And I had to stop myself and go, you're being a dick right now. Okay, no problem. I'll go around.
Yeah.
But it was just because somebody fell in that position the day before and they didn't want anybody else getting hurt. One idiot ruins it for us all. But anyway, that has nothing to do with anything we were talking about before Armando walked in.
It's America's hyper-litigious culture ruining it for us all, isn't it, really?
We get used to things like these telephones in our hands that we're recording with.
Yeah.
We get so used to, you know, the joys and instant gratification.
Shifts.
Yeah.
That
this has nothing to do with
it's still that age-old, regardless of anything else about the guy, Louis C.K. is brilliant. Everything's amazing and no one's happy.
No, yeah.
It's just still one of the greatest little comedy sequences I've
ever
seen.
Oh, yeah, he's talking about getting Wi-Fi in the sky.
Yeah, in the sky, and that's the newest thing at the time he knew existed, and it took 5 minutes for someone to feel entitled to it.
Yeah, it stopped
five
working.
5 minutes, and now it's like, this is bullshit.
Yeah. You're in a metal bird in the sky.
Life is we already live in the sci-fi future.
Yeah, we're already there.
Even the Jetsons didn't have iPhones.
Ooh, I never thought of that.
Right? They had big, clunky video screen phones
that
didn't have maps.
They had suitcases that had cars in them.
Yeah.
But not...
Yeah, we don't have that.
Interesting.
It's probably for
the best. Cell phones were invented from Star Trek. Not invented from, but inspired by.
In
many ways. Modern-day cell phones.
It's amazing how, to get completely off topic for a second...
Well, we lost the topic the second Armando
but
walked in.
Sort of speculative science fiction has always been one of my favorite genres. Like, almost everything was predicted by someone.
Sure.
You know, space travel, thought control, video phones, all kinds of things. You know what? No one, to my knowledge, someone correct me if I'm wrong, no one even imagined Google Street View. That is so far, like, no one even imagined we would have that level of data storage and retrieval technology to actually just kind of for the hell of it make Google Street View. It's
you
not like
look at anybody's
needed.
House in the world.
Nearly the world.
Suburban, commercial.
No one even imagined that, to my knowledge. I read a lot of speculative sci-fi from all eras. And, because no one thought in those terms. Also, the fact that everyone thought about video phones. That was the big thing that was in everything. You know what? Now that we've got them, we don't really use them that much.
Well, old people still don't know how to, not show their chin. But that's okay.
But most of the time, now that we have video phones, most people are texting.
Yeah. Again, the societal shifts or and everything. Communicating with people that are not immediately next to you. I was looking at extended Google Drive storage. It's like you can get 300 terabytes now. I mean, it's $300 a month or whatever, but still, but it's still, like
you can do that.
Even 10 years ago, that wasn't conceivable. Yeah, that was like a single terabyte of, oh, this is it. This is the space we need.
Yeah,
that's just nuts. Just constant digital space is just absurd. Yeah. And then I mean, even bringing it back to magic, it's like okay, and then how do you conquer people's just ability to be so comfortable with these amazing advances and yet still fool them with a card trick.
Yeah. Well, that comes up a lot, this idea of is technological mirror, you know, is technological sort of semi-literal magic, and the incredible things, is that making it harder to do magic? And I think the short answer is no.
Mm-mm.
Because magic, as, you know, theatrical magic, is just whatever people perceive the rules of reality to be, doing something that apparently contravenes that. Mm-hmm. So you can absolutely do magic with technology. You just have to create the illusion of something that people don't think is possible with it.
Yeah, I do one trick with a phone, like using the screen on the phone. I'm hesitant to do anything. There's some brilliant things that have come out in the magic world, but I'm hesitant to do it just because no matter what, people are going to be like, it's Bluetooth. It's Wi-Fi.
Well, you know the way you figure that out? Institute of Layman Studies. Just ask the people.
Yeah, exactly.
Ask them what they think. Were you amazed by that? Do you have any idea how that was done? Mm-hmm. Ask the forbidden questions that we are taught in magic not to ask, and we fucking should ask.
Sure.
It's a bad idea. It's bad not to ask that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you find out. All my magic has been informed by that for well over a decade now. Ask the general public what they thought.
In any career, there's an advance in talking to people who are not immediately... I mean, I've gotten so much better as a performer, as a magician, by working with magicians that are better than me. But in terms of, like, building a show that regular people can relate to and enjoy, that's a whole nother ballgame.
And are actually amazed by.
Yeah.
It's constantly fascinating, and I enjoy it because now I'm ready to expect it, when you ask people – every time I see a magic show by somebody else – I still ask the audience afterwards, like individually, what do you think? What was the most amazing thing? Is there anything in that show you think you know how it was done?
Mm-hmm.
And so many things, classics of magic, are so much less deceptive than everyone thinks.
Sure.
The amount of people who can figure out that you stuck those oranges under that thing when they weren't looking below the bar or whatever, it's high. It's a lot more people than most magicians realize. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. As long as you know that.
Yeah, that's...
And can plan around that and adapt to that. But step one is to find out what they're actually thinking about you and your material.
Doing cruise ships is very enlightening for that reason because, people come up and they'll tell you, like, what their favorite part of the show was. But then, in my case, I get immediately self-conscious of, like, oh, do they not like the rest?
Yeah.
Is the rest not original enough?
I liked the ending.
Yeah.
I loved the bit where you left the stage at the end. That bit was great.
There's a lot of that. But just taking it as it comes. Anything exciting on the horizon besides the castle?
A whole bunch of stuff is going on. What's even happening? I've lost track. I tend to just have to think about the thing upcoming because right now it's the castle week. But then I finish the castle week. I go off on another ship gig, which, again, the couple of things I want to work on at the castle, part of the reason for that is I want to be doing these on the ships.
Sure.
Because one of the routines, the one I mentioned is a new update of an old thing, is a – basically a logistic – I have this one routine. It's the improv prediction story thing that I do that you've seen that's really good. It's dressed up as an improv story that turns out to be a prediction. It's one of the best things in the show. It's also the single biggest pain in the ass in my entire repertoire. Because when I do a 45-minute ship show, this one trick is more effort to set up and perform and just general life irritation than the entire rest of the show put together, including all the camera rigging and AV setup and everything. This one damn trick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. And I think finally, after years of sort of tweaking and researching, I think I have a way to adapt a much more convenient method to get just as good a reaction, maybe even better in some ways. Basically, do the same trick, but just with a much better quality of life without having to deal with all the just irritation every time I do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how in many cases, the more work you put on into the show or the particular trick, before each time you do it,
yeah.
a lot of times the better the reaction is, I've noticed. Like, there's something very similarly I've been doing. I have to build for every show because I give it away.
Yeah.
And it's such a pain in the butt. But I've realized if I don't give it away, the reaction isn't as good.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Something about just the tangibility of them getting to keep the object.
Wait, keeping what?
Which
thing specifically?
It's a picture that it without giving away the ending, but oh, okay. it's a cutout of a picture.
Oh, I think okay. I haven't seen you do it, but we talked about it.
Yeah.
Right, anyway, no spoilers.
That's one of those things. Same as your 7-year thing that took me 5+ years of an idea swirling around, and finally figuring it out.
Yeah.
How to make it magical and how to just make it clean and work. But because of that, you know. You're doing a lot of prep, you know, 30 minutes prep time for that one trick a lot of the time.
Definitely.
So, there's a give and take, and you have to figure out how much is worth. I'm jealous of guys that can just, John, for many cases, his stuff just ready to go that he didn't really have to prep too much, but still will kill with. I'm like, oh, I want to be able to do that. But that's just, you know, that's
pros and cons.
What works for your personality and what works
and also there
for
is
your style.
A lot of people, again, the Institute of Layman Studies, right, actually talking to audience members, a lot of people sense either consciously or subconsciously and appreciate when they can tell some production effort is going to something.
Yeah.
And that often does actually play out. Now, obviously, if you're also being as funny and as magical and as engaging as a person who's not doing that amount of prep work and production work, obviously you want to bring those up to the same standard or higher. Again, all of us should be working harder all the time and aiming higher. But people often sense that level of commitment and connect with it on either a conscious or subconscious level.
And bringing it back to how we started, I think that was what felt the most painful yesterday was not getting that from – because you get so used to the audience walking out of there going, you've put a lot of work into that show. And they walked out of there going, I don't think they work that hard on that show. But, I mean, we did make an effort to go, this is newer material.
Yeah.
But I think, once again, going back to this, I think the audience goes, oh, I didn't come here to see new stuff. I came here to see really good stuff. I spent lots of money to be here.
Yeah. And it's one of the biggest things that I now notice when watching performers, that you can tell whether they are on that stage. And sure, all of us to some degree are there for ourselves because why are we doing this? We enjoy it. We need to make money, whatever the reasons are. But in that moment, in that show, you can tell whether their focus is on serving the audience or serving their own ego. Mm-hmm. And it's so often the latter.
Sure. Yeah.
Whether magicians, comedians, jugglers, whatever. So often the latter.
I've lost so much patience for that. And maybe that's just going back to quote-unquote achievements in your career. Yeah. But I really am losing patience and seeing performers that aren't connecting with the audience. Because I'm totally guilty of that, and it's something I've consciously made an effort to work and get 100% better at.
Absolutely have been plenty of times guilty as well.
But when you're watching a show that could easily have been done, you know, to a camera and shown to you on television because there's no audience no reaction needed. I think it's a disservice to people coming to see live theater and seeing, that's the whole reason you escape your television and escape the countless hours of content that's in your living room.
Yeah, and so many performers, I mean, but a lot, maybe it's not so much particularly here at the Castle, maybe it's just because I see so many more performers here at all because there's just more people here. So maybe I notice it more, but so many people who are clearly performing to sort of get off on, oh, I'm a performer, I'm getting all this attention, people are gasping at what I'm doing. It's just that sort of self-centered power rush. And it's not like the audience won't necessarily enjoy that if they still get to see what they want, but just, that energy focus just always irks me now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not warranted. It's coming from a weird place. Yeah. And I think audiences... we're in a special time of being live performers because audiences are, I think, the most savvy that they've ever been.
Yeah.
So that's a new responsibility as a performer, but also that means that you can't rely on, if you were that type of person, it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, I'm excited. Bring it. The more audiences can see through bullshit, the better that is for those of us who aren't trying to sell it.
And back to cruise ships, that's the... the other best thing about working cruise ships. They've seen, especially older ships, older people, they've seen that. These people live on ships for like 100 days, no exaggeration.
That has
They've seen everything.
Yeah, I didn't expect that when I first did one. And it makes sense in hindsight, like so many things do. Of course, they're seeing all kinds of variety acts all the time, including
they see more variety acts than people.
Yeah,
most people who aren't, you know, seeing stuff.
They've seen so dozens and dozens of magicians easily, and they've seen all the standard stocky, schlocky hack stuff that most people are doing.
So it's forced me to really step up my game and try to remove as much standard stuff, or if I'm doing standard stuff, change it as much as I can to make it that they don't notice it's a standard thing.
Yeah.
Because you need 120 minutes, 100 minutes of material, whatever it is. So not everything is going to be A,
but you want
it to be good.
You can still cook a – the last chef cooked a steak. You can still cook a steak, but make it a different steak experience.
Ooh, that's – title of this episode, A Different Steak.
Well, that's always when explaining to sort of normal, you know, lay people, non-magicians, normal people, whatever you want to call them, the people we actually care about, the people we actually care
about,
the people
who don't have egos and don't need attention from strangers.
It's the running joke, isn't it? All performers are fundamentally were lacking love as a child, one way or another.
In some capacity.
Comedians, why do we perform? Actors, comedians, magicians, someone craving the attention that somehow they were missing.
Somebody look at me.
Hey, pay attention to me. I didn't have any attention.
Yeah.
It's all of us to some degree. And, you can channel that healthily instead of unhealthily. But I find the best analogy for magic is being a chef in nearly every way. It's the strongest. It's the closest thing because there are only so many meats and so many vegetables and so many ways of cooking that it's hard to create a truly original dish. Most magic tricks aren't completely original. That's okay. They're not meant to be. You can't come with a completely new thing, but you find ways to take these techniques and these ingredients and create innovative, engaging, wonderful dining experiences out of them.
Sure.
Your show being the five-course meal as opposed to the one single burger you buy at a convenience stand.
Pizza's the greatest example of that. My wife and I used to live in Chicago, and then we moved to Florida, and we couldn't find good pizza anywhere. And you would think cheese, sauce, dough, not that hard.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Because these are special ways in which they've created using the same ingredients as everybody else, maybe, fresher or however you want to compare it. But still, it does come back to magic in that, or in any performance, I think, in music especially, they're using the same notes.
Yeah.
Everybody's on the same scale of notes.
Yeah.
Just how they're pairing it and how they're making it work and how they're channeling it through their voice.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was good.
Yeah. And then the other dichotomy between a cook who just learns a recipe and follows it mindlessly. And a great cook is still a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the military, damn, good cook. Yes, thank you. But then a chef is someone who innovates and learns and experiments and
riffs. And it's going to fail.
Yeah, absolutely. Won't always succeed.
That was one of my favorite things Anthony Bourdain talked about when he was working at his first fancy, not first, but one of his more well-known fancy French restaurants before that famous article came out in the 90s, before he was kind of well-known because of it. He was like, I was cooking really fancy dishes in my own way that wasn't good.
Yeah.
I was making this amazing food that wasn't good, but it's at a French bistro, so people thought it was. And
well, that's the thing that I noticed, particularly at things like FISM or in magic competitions. A lot of things that play well for magician crowds, right, coming back to playing to the regulars at the castle rather than the people, a lot of things that play well are things that are really original, whether or not they're actually any good.
Yeah.
The magic community, because again, we've seen the same stuff so much more, so people get massive collective bonus over originality. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's better. It's just more novel.
There was a lady at Magic Live, the rave at Magic Live, one of the shows, was a lady who did carb manipulation standing on her hands with her feet.
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah.
This sounded amazing.
Which I'm sure actually was amazing. Yeah. But still, and I think if laymen saw that and then compared it to people doing it with their hands, they'd be like, well, the guy with the hands is way better.
Yeah.
But magicians,
they
are like,
did it better.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have your baseline. I mean, to appreciate a riff on a thing, you need to be familiar with the original thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
To enjoy a parody.
I'm not saying people
satire
wouldn't enjoy that and be impressed by it, but I think if they were comparing the two, if they had never seen either and had seen, some amazing hand manipulation,
well, because
that's what they'd go
having
towards.
Seen it, I would imagine with your hands, you can probably do things that look more impossible.
Exactly.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, so.
I mean, I heard amazing things. That was the talk of the town at Magic. I showed up. Yeah. I only was there the last two nights, but
I've seen that happen again and again, something that gets amazing reviews to magicians because it is a more incredible version of something that is mind-blowing to us. That means it, like, just being more incredible to magicians doesn't achieve anything because to normal people, the original is equally incredible.
Yeah.
Then you think hasn't improved it in any way. But, which is not to poo-poo innovation. It could be excellent, but be careful on what you're innovating and for whom.
Mm-hmm.
For cruise ship crowds, massively relevant. For other people, do it. And for most people, like, innovating with the performance style of magic, like treating your audience with respect as intelligent human beings, that's a pretty groundbreaking idea in magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me. I get a lot of the good comments I get from audiences are about that. It bothers me that that should be seen as innovative in magic.
Yeah.
Really shouldn't be.
Yeah, that should be the start of that mutual respect for the audience and expecting them to have some sort of intelligence.
Concept.
Yeah. I mean, that was my favorite thing about Second City. Play to the top of your intelligence, play to the top of the audience's intelligence, too.
Completely.
So Armando's back with drinks.
Goddamn right.
With John Armstrong's giant pitcher of iced tea.
Oh, that's right. Him and his iced tea.
He went through that whole thing.
Man loves the iced tea.
It's insane. Ridiculous. The things I put up with to work at the castle. But I got to go set up and do three shows, so...
Yeah, I'm going to go eat something and then watch one of them and hang out. And then go back to cutting out plastic bottles to work on my things for next week.
Just building, man. Just building for the future.
Building the stuff. Creating a better, different steak experience.
Exactly. A better steak experience
At least striving to.
Striving we'll for find better out steak. Week. Vegan steak, perhaps.
It's been a pleasure, Nick, as always.
As always. We'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.